Chapter 17. Hydrophobia. To the average person of the present day, the mention of the name Pasteur immediately conjures up the thought of a horrible malady, hydrophobia. To the many who have only a superficial understanding of his connection with fermentation, silkworm troubles and anti-anthrax inoculation, he is nevertheless famous as the savior of humanity from the ravages of mad dogs. The pity is that since Pasteur's day there should have been so much fear-mongering on the subject, for hydrophobia is a complaint of the nerves and, consequently, fear is its primary factor. Various instances have been recorded of cases unquestionably brought on by suggestion. For example, two young Frenchmen were bitten at Havre by the same dog in January 1853. One died from the effects within a month, but before this the other young man had sailed for America, where he lived for 15 years in total ignorance of the death of his former companion. In September 1868, he returned to France and learned of the tragedy, and then himself developed symptoms. Within 3 weeks he was dead of hydrophobia. Again, a patient who had first threatened to bite his medical attendant, after being told that the correct symptom in a human being was actually the use of the fists, struck out all round him like a boxer and indulged up to the time of his death in this quite novel form of paroxysms. The avoidance of fear is, therefore, of fundamental importance after a dog bite, and the very slight risk of serious disease is confirmed by the thousands of innocuous bites received by veterinary surgeons and others who constantly handle animals. Occasionally there may be a victim to a bite in the same way that deaths have been known to occur after pin pricks and stings of insects, while scratches and wounds sometimes bring about tetanus, of which complaint hydrophobia appears to be a variety. According to Sir Victor Horsley's evidence before the Lords Committee on Rabies, the probability of hydrophobia after dog bite among the untreated has been variously calculated to be from 5% to 15%. A French researcher named Boulet has stated that of 100 persons bitten by rabid animals and entirely untreated in any way whatever, not more than 5 would develop symptoms of hydrophobia. Thus, happily, the victim of a supposed mad dog stands a very good chance of escaping any trouble, if he can only be left alone. To begin with, it has to be remembered that there is considerable doubt of there being any such specific disease as rabies, and a mad dog, in the popular sense, may possibly be relegated to the same category as the witch of the Middle Ages. The neglected lives of the pariah dogs of the East are sufficient to account for many finally suffering from the paroxysms and other symptoms that go by the name of rabies, and when we contemplate the chained existences of numbers of dogs in Europe, our only wonder is that more do not develop madness. It may safely be said that a healthy, happy life is the best safeguard against trouble. For an animal to be in a savage state or to foam at the mouth is no real indication of rabies. For instance, in A System of Surgery, we read, "Some idea may be gained of the frequency of mistakes of diagnosis in connection with canine rabies by the statement of Faber, who says that of 892 dogs brought into the Veterinary Institute of Vienna under suspicion of rabies, only 31 proved to be really affected." During a scare in England, according to the Field of 19 April 1919, Mr. Robert Vickery, a well-known kennel owner, believed that many of the experts called in to diagnose the supposed cases of rabies were quite wrong in their reports. It seems likely that many animals were merely suffering from dietary problems due to wartime conditions, as wrong feeding has been known to produce symptoms like those of so-called rabies, as evidenced in the scare in the Klondike in 1896, an account of which has been given in the Journal of Zoophily, by Arnold George. It is clear that more fear than intelligence is shown in regard to rabies, particularly as animals suspected of it are almost invariably put to death summarily, instead of being kept alive under kind and careful observation. Moreover, once they are dead, the complaint cannot be traced by a post-mortem examination. The test applied is the one introduced by Pasteur, and this brings us to his commencement of work on the subject. It was in the year 1880 that two mad dogs were presented to him for investigation by an army veterinary surgeon named Borel. Then began the series of observations, very cruel for the most part, that resulted in the proud announcement to the Academy of Science at Paris of a process that would, so Pasteur maintained, infallibly prevent rabies from developing in persons who had undergone the misfortune to have been bitten by rabid animals. The date of this communication was memorable in the history of medicine and glorious for French science, according to the enthusiastic praise of the chairman of the Academy, M. Boulet. The day was also memorable for the inauguration of A System of Intolerance, the antithesis of all that is scientific, which has, sadly, continued with regard to the fetish worship of Pastorian Orthodoxy. On this eventful date this intolerance was carried to the length of refusing to hear a word from M. Jules Guérin, Dr. Collin and others who dared to offer any criticism of Pasteur's conclusions. The great man had spoken. He dared to claim infallibility, "I call my method perfect." It was demanded that others either offer praise or else hold their peace. Yet how much there was to criticize. The very inoculation test for proving madness was quite uncertain. This test, introduced by Pasteur, involved taking some matter, saliva, blood, part of the brain or spinal cord, usually the cerebral spinal fluid, from the suspected animal and injecting it into a living rabbit. It is obvious common sense, apart from Bechamp's illuminating explanation, that matter from one creature introduced into another is likely to be injurious. Fulpin, a French doctor and physiologist and a supporter of Pasteur, himself found that the saliva of healthy human beings killed off rabbits as quickly as the saliva of a child who had died of hydrophobia. The condition of a rabbit after inoculation proves nothing except the strength or weakness of its powers of resistance, and yet the paralyzation of the hindquarters of a rabbit is made the test of rabies in the dog from which it received the injection. True that nowadays rabid dogs are said to have negri bodies in the nerve cells, or their branches, and these are claimed to be not causal, but diagnostic agents, but considering the contradictions and mistakes in regard to bacteria and disease, we may well question a diagnosis that depends upon these negri bodies, especially as it does not seem to have been proved that they are always absent in other diseases. So much for the test. Now as to the prophylactic, what changes Pasteur made from the start in his nostrum. In 1884, at a medical congress at Copenhagen, he announced that by weakening the virus from dogs supposedly mad by transmission through monkeys and by fortifying it again through rabbits, he had obtained something protective to dogs and which would eradicate rabies from the world. Considering that nothing then was, or now is, known of the cause of rabies, if regarded as a specific malady, as it was in Pasteur's opinion, surely such a boast savors very much of the cure-alls of quackery. Pasteur himself had to admit that he had not succeeded in rendering refractory more than 15 or 16 out of 20 dogs. Afterwards he abandoned the monkey as a transmission agent, having originally chosen it, as he said, because of its physical resemblance to man. In a pamphlet Hydrophobia and Pasteur, by Vincent Richards, the author asks, "Does the result that 15 or 16 out of the 20 dogs inoculated remained unaffected in any way warrant the assumption that the method adopted by Pasteur was protective?" On 26 October 1885, Pasteur described his later method of treatment, which was to take the spinal cords of rabbits that had received injections of virus, keep these for varying lengths of time, then beat them up, each with twice its own weight of sterilized bouillon. Finally, commencing with the weakest, inoculate the patient for 10 days successively. Moreover, he triumphantly pointed to a successful case, that of Joseph Meister, a little Alsatian boy, 9 years old, who had been badly bitten by a dog on the preceding 4th of July 1885, and 2 days later was taken to Pasteur for treatment. This being the crucial case upon which Pasteur inaugurated his claim to success, let us now review it. The worst of the many severe bites received by the child were cauterized the same day with carbolic acid. At 8 p.m. on July 6, Pasteur, by means of a Provis syringe, inoculated the boy with some drops of his broth of spinal cords, taken from rabbits that had died of the paralytic complaint induced by injections into the brains of these poor little animals. The actual operation was probably undertaken by Dr. Grancher, who was present on the occasion. For the following 10 days, Joseph Meister was regularly inoculated, receiving in all about a dozen injections of the spinal cord broth. Now, in considering this case, we must ask what proof Pasteur had of either the madness of the dog or the probability of hydrophobia ensuing in the victim. The rabid state of the animal was inferred by its savagery and the fact that a post-mortem examination disclosed hay, straw and pieces of wood, in the stomach. The presence of the latter would seem far more likely to indicate that the dog had been ravenous, probably starving, a condition that in itself would have accounted for its savage behavior. As to the boy, the number and severity of the bites he had received caused the doctors Vulpin and Grancher, who were called in, to decide that he was almost inevitably exposed to contract hydrophobia in consequence. Why? As we have seen, there was no real proof of rabies in the dog that had attacked him. But, for argument's sake, granting that the animal had been mad, it must be remembered that the wounds had been cauterized. Though opinions differ as regards cauterization, many authorities seem strongly in favor, and reference may be made to Youatt's cauterization of upwards of 400 persons, including such application 5 times on himself, without hydrophobia developing in so much as a single case. Dr. Cunningham, of Chicago, reported as cauterizing 120 persons annually, has averaged the mortality as about 3 in that number. Pasteur himself once wrote to a doctor near Paris as follows. Sir, the cauterizations that you have carried out ought to reassure you fully as to the consequences of the bite. Attempt no other treatment, it is useless. Apart from cauterization, the chance of hydrophobia developing in a person bitten even by a so-called genuinely mad dog has been seen to be small. And, moreover, as incubation has been known to extend to 12 months, often to 2 years, or more, the danger for Joseph Meister had obviously not been ended when, after little more than 3 months, Pasteur dared to acclaim him as a brand snatched from the burning, so to speak, by his spinal cord dosage. Finally, other people, including the dog's owner, Max Vaughn, who had been bitten by the same dog as Meister and on the same day, and who were neither cauterized nor treated by Pasteur, continued in good health. Thus we see that this first much vaunted case of Pasteurian success has no more to be said for it, when examined carefully, than that Joseph Meister, as far as his history is known, does not appear to have come off better or worse through Pasteur's treatment than several others who went without it. But all were not so fortunate as young Joseph. Another child, Matthew Vidiv, inoculated by Pasteur and supposedly cured, died 7 months after treatment. To excuse the death of again another child, Louise Pelletier, failure was attributed to the bites being on the head and too much time having elapsed after the bite before the inoculation. Yet Pasteur had previously claimed that his treatment would be successful if commenced at any time before hydrophobia set in, even after a year or more. Contradictions seem to have been of no account when needed as excuses, so much so that an American, Dr. Dulles of Philadelphia, has said that on placing Pasteur's statements side by side, the acceptance of almost anyone demands the obliteration of others. Dr. Charles Bell Taylor, in the National Review of July 1890, gave a list of cases in which Pasteur's patients had died, while the dogs that had bitten them remained healthy. A notable failure was that of a French postman named Pierre Rascal who, along with another man, was attacked by a dog supposed to be mad. He was not actually bitten, for the dog's teeth did not penetrate his clothing, but his companion received severe bites. The latter refused to go to the Pasteur Institute, and remained in perfect health, but unfortunate Rascal was forced by the postal authorities to undergo the treatment, which he did from the 9th to the 14th of March. On the following the 12th of April, severe symptoms set in, with pain at the points of inoculation, not at the place of a bite, for remember that he had never been bitten. On the 14th of April, he died of paralytic hydrophobia, the new disease brought into the world by Pasteur. Little wonder that Professor Michel Peter complained. Pasteur does not cure hydrophobia, he gives it. Already, in his own day, there were many unbelievers in his method. To these, in the London Lancet of the 15th of May 1886, the following caution was addressed by Dr. G. H. Brandt, evidently a sincere believer in the words and works of Pasteur. To the unbelievers, M. Pasteur says, wait. Time will reveal many facts connected with this question, and it is only by continual experience and constant observations carried on for a considerable time on hundreds of cases that we shall be able to arrive at positive and definite results. Many years have gone by since these words were written, and we find ourselves now in a position to study the experience and observations for which earlier critics were told to be patient. The claim for Pasteur's success is based upon the assertion that he reduced the death rate for hydrophobia from 16% to 1%. But a Colonel Tillard has shown in a pamphlet called Pasteur and Rabies that the 16% theory of death rate before Pasteur brought in his supposed preventive must be ridiculously wrong. As the yearly average number of deaths for France up to then had not been more than 30, the number of the bitten, according to the 16% estimate, says Colonel Tillard, should have been less than 200. But Pasteur, on the contrary, had 1778 patients during the year 1887, which meant, according to this calculation, that over 250 would have died had they not gone to him. This is nothing short of an absurdity in view of the fact that the highest total of deaths ever recorded for any year was 66. If we turn from France to other countries, we find that in Zurich, for instance, of 233 persons bitten by rabid animals in a period of 42 years, only 4 died, 2 of whom were bitten in parts where preventive measures could not be adopted. In addition, Wendt of Breslau treated 106 persons bitten by mad animals between the years 1810 and 1823. Of these, 2 died. During an epidemic of rabies in Stockholm in 1824, 106 bitten persons presented themselves at the Royal Hospital, of whom only 1 contracted hydrophobia. Many more instances might be enumerated, for example, the gunpowder treatment formerly carried out in the island of Haiti, where, although dog bites were common, hydrophobia was practically unknown. Such results of pre-Pasteurian treatment surpass the best boasts of Pasteur and upset the truth of the 16% to 1% reduction in mortality. Even were the latter claim correct, it would merely be brought about by the huge multiplication of cases, a method of manipulation continually found in statistics, and which, as Dr. Boucher of Paris points out, does not prevent deaths from hydrophobia increasing even as the percentage decreases. As to this increase, the facts speak only too painfully. Before Pasteur's treatment, the average number of deaths per annum from hydrophobia in France was 30, after his treatment the yearly average number increased to 45. The late Professor Carlo Ruota gave the annual average mortality from hydrophobia in Italy as being 65 before the Pasteur treatment, and complained of its increase to 85 after the installation of 9 anti-rabic institutes. We cannot therefore wonder at the criticism that he published in the Corriere della Sera. The numerous cures that are boasted of in our 9 anti-rabic institutions in Italy are cures of bitten persons in whom the rabies would never have developed, even if they had not been subjected to the anti-rabic inoculations, and the small number of failures represent precisely the number of those in whom the rabies has taken, and who, for that reason, die after the inoculation, as they would have died without it. This is the mildest judgment that can be passed on the work of our 9 anti-rabic institutes, even if we might not unreasonably ask if some of the inoculated persons were not killed by the inoculations themselves. As a comment on this, we can add that the National Anti-Vivisection Society has collected a list of 1220 deaths after Pasteurian treatment between 1885 and 1901, and that the British Union for the Abolition of Vivisection is making a further list, which amounts already to nearly 2,000, and that every one of these deaths after treatment has been taken from the official returns of Pasteur Institutes. In regard to the statistical returns of these institutes, we will quote published by the Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection Society, London. Dr. George Wilson's summary in his reservation memorandum of the Royal Commission on Vivisection. Pasteur carefully screened his statistics, after some untoward deaths had occurred during treatment or immediately after, by ruling that all deaths should be excluded from the statistical returns which occurred either during treatment or within 15 days of the last injection. It is in accordance with this most extraordinary rule that the percentage of deaths in all Pasteur institutes works out at such a low figure. Thus, in the report on the Casali Institute for 1910, Major Harvey commences his comments on the statistics of the year as follows. In this year, 2073 persons, bitten or licked by rabid or suspected rabid animals, were treated, yielding a percentage of failures of 0.19. This percentage Major Harvey explains in these words. There were 26 deaths from hydrophobia. Of these, 14 died during the treatment, 8 within 15 days of completion of treatment, and 4 later than 15 days after completion of treatment. Only the last 4 are counted as failures of the treatment according to Pasteur's definition of a failure, and it is on this number that the percentage failure rate is calculated. This screening of statistics prevents the inclusion of the death of the late King Alexander of Greece among the list of Pasteurian failures. The announcement was made, after a monkey had bitten the king, that expert advice had been summoned from Paris. Had the king lived, no doubt a paean of victory would have proclaimed his rescue through Pasteurian methods. As the king instead, unhappily, grew worse, a discreet silence was, for the most part, observed as to his treatment. The truth, however, we learn in a bulletin received by the Greek legation in London and reported in the Daily Mail, Athens, Saturday. The king passed a critical night. His fever attained 105.6 degrees F, and was preceded by severe shivering and accompanied by a fit of delirium, which lasted 1.5 hours. This morning he was again vaccinated. His heart has weakened. His breathing is irregular. As the king thus died during the course of treatment, we must apparently not only blame the monkey rather than the vaccination for his death, but must also not even count the latter as a failure of Pasteurian treatment. Another more recent case cannot be thus excluded from this category. The Daily Mail of 14 January 1921, reports, a rare case of hydrophobia was revealed in Paris yesterday when Me. Gisseler, a Dutch woman, died as the result of having been bitten by a mad dog 8 months ago. After the bite, Madame Gisseler was immediately treated at the Pasteur Institute and altogether received 25 injections of serum. The excuse then follows that, such cases of death after treatment are extremely rare. This announcement loses its force when we consider that many deaths, like that of the late King of Greece, are excluded by an arbitrary time limit from being considered as failures. Apart from the so-called accidents of treatment and apart also from deaths after treatment, from whatever cause, an additional argument against Pasteur's method is its introduction of a new disease, paralytic hydrophobia, entirely different from the many forms of pseudo-rabies. That this complaint is often wrongly attributed to other causes, syphilis, alcoholism, or even influenza, and in other cases glossed over altogether, is disclosed in a report entitled Paralysis of Anti-Rabies Treatment, by Dr. P. Remmelinger, director of the Pasteur Institute, Morocco, to the International Rabies Conference held at the Pasteur Institute, Paris, April, 1927. He writes, we were impressed with the discrepancy between the number of observations published by directors of institutes and the number of cases orally acknowledged by them to have occurred. Such occurrences were commonly kept secret, as if they were a reflection on the Pasteur method or a reflection on the doctor who applied it. Such a policy appeared to us to be clumsy, and the reverse of scientific. And again, page 85, we have come to the conclusion that certain institutes conceal their cases. On various occasions we have found in medical literature observations concerning paralysis of treatment, and we have afterwards failed to find in the report and statistics of the institutes concerned any mention of these unfortunate cases. As far back as 1 January 1920, Pasteurian statistics were criticized in the Times by no less an authority than the eminent statistician Professor Carl Pearson, well known as the Galton Professor of Eugenics and Director of the Laboratory for National Eugenics at the London University. Questioning the boast of Pasteur's conquest of hydrophobia, he wrote, full statistical data for the Pasteur treatment both in Europe and Asia are not available. What data are published permit no prudent statistical judgment. If the Indian government is in possession of information on this point, why is it withheld? If it does not possess it, why does it not obtain it and issue it? Is there any cause for dissatisfaction with the results obtained, and have any changes been made in the treatment on the basis of such dissatisfaction with the results obtained, and have any changes been made in the treatment on the basis of such dissatisfaction or for any other reason? These are the questions for which answers should be demanded in the House of Commons. No government is to be blamed for adopting a course recommended by its scientific advisors. But it sins not only against science and humanity, but against the world as well, if it does not provide the material it must possess for a judgment of the success or failure of its efforts. Given our present state of knowledge, I venture to assert that it is not wise to speak yet of the conquest of rabies. Such is the expert statistical commentary that after all these years answers Pasteur's request to await the verdict of time and experience. Even the information obtainable from the Pasteur Institutes can hardly be encouraging to believers in Pasteur's treatment. For instance, if we turn to the reports of the Pasteur Institute at Kasauli in India, we find a big increase from 10 deaths from hydrophobia in 1900 to 72 deaths in 1915. Against this we can scarcely set the corresponding increase in cases, because so many of the latter cannot be described as genuine. It is frankly acknowledged in the 16th annual report that many of the Europeans have undergone no risk whatever. We can well believe this when we recall the example of Lord and Lady Minto, who went through the course of inoculations merely because their pet dog had been bitten by another dog supposed to have been mad. A large proportion of the Indians can run no risk either, except from the treatment, seeing that the patients, according to the report's own showing, have not all been bitten, but many merely scratched, or licked, and not all by rabid, but many by merely suspected animals. Moreover, these animals included human beings, cows, calves, pigs, deer, donkeys, elephants and many other species. Between the years 1912 and 1916, there were 114 patients who had been bitten by horses and 80 who had been the victims of human bites. Thus we see that in a considerable number of so-called cures, there is no pretension to the patients ever having run any risk from actual mad dog bites. In an interesting note, this 16th annual report recommends the use of atropine in cases which have developed symptoms of rabies. It goes on to say, "The use of this drug was suggested to us by Major F. Norman White, to whom we acknowledge our thanks. Its effect is to relieve throat spasm, and if it is given at suitable intervals, this distressing symptom can be entirely obliterated, with the result that the patient is able to eat and drink. Apart from this beneficent effect, there is always in the background the hope that in certain cases throat spasm, which is the proximate cause of death, might be held in check until the phase of recovery had set in. Clearly the most hopeful cases would be those of the untreated, in which the incubation period was naturally a long one." So here we find Pasteurian workers themselves acknowledging a possible cure which has no connection with Pasteur and further, on their own admission, that it is quite possibly more profitable without the addition of his treatment. For that matter, hydrophobia has never been a complaint without a remedy, even after the paroxysms have set in. Pilocarpine, a drug which induces profuse sweating, has been known to cure cases, while, on a similar principle, Dr. Buisson of Paris, author of a treatise entitled Hydrophobia, Preventive and Curative Measures, cured himself of an attack by the use of a vapor bath and inaugurated a remedial system, named after himself, which has been most successful. It is, to say the least of it, remarkable that definite curative measures should be overlooked and set aside for a mere preventive which cannot set forward a single tangible proof of ever having saved anyone, while, on the other hand, as we have seen, there is undeniable evidence that it has created a new complaint, i.e. paralytic hydrophobia. For such a situation there must be some explanation, and perhaps the Indian paper The Pioneer, on 12 March 1919, unconsciously provided it. "The Central Research Institute at Kasauli has developed its vaccine production to an almost incredible extent. The yearly average before the war was 18,500 cubic centimeters, during the war it rose to over 2.5 million cubic centimeters, and included anti-typhoid, cholera, pneumonia and influenza vaccines. From a monetary point of view alone, the value of the Kasauli vaccines for the period of the war was about half a million sterling. Pasteur's inoculations for hydrophobia form part of a vast money-making system, in which the beneficiaries have no wish that any item should be discredited. The Kasauli returns are only a fraction of the monetary gains accruing in Europe, Asia and America. A few years back we were told by Professor Ray Lancaster that the Lister Institute in London made £15,800 a year from the sale of vaccines and sera, a sum that seems likely to have increased largely. Thus we find science dominated by commercialism. Were it not for pecuniary advantages, there seems little doubt that the broth emulsions of spinal cords would have gone the same way as an older less nauseous panacea, the hair of the dog that bit you. From the earliest records of history, the prevalent mania seems to have been for frightfulness in medicinal remedies, but the witch's cauldron itself never surpassed the toxic concoctions inaugurated by Pasteur in what has truly proved to be, sadly, a new era in medicine. It is the era of the injection into the blood of matter of varying degrees of offensiveness, the era in which animal experimentation, vastly increased, has led to experiments on human beings, and the credulous and uninformed are everywhere at the mercy of the syringe, all because of the insatiable hunger of the pharmaceutical corporations for profit and domination of the health industry.